for committee here. Before we get started, I'd just like to remind everybody that there is a capacity rule in the room here. I believe it's 120. That rule will be enforced by the Sergeant at Arms. If there's any testifiers out in the hallway that are on the list, please let the Sergeant of Arms know so we can bring them forward as scheduled. So. I call the meeting of the House Labor Committee to order. There's a quorum present today. Members, you'll find a copy of the minutes from January 23rd, 2019 in your folder. Is there any additions or corrections? Representative Eklund, what's your pleasure on the minutes?
I'd be happy to move the minutes, Mr. Chair.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. Next on the agenda, we have House File 5. I will move that House File 5 be referred to the Commerce Committee. We have the bill before us. Representative Halverson, please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Appreciate your time today, especially those of you who came in on such a very cold day to be part of this discussion. House File 5 is a proposal to provide paid family medical leave to Minnesota employers to provide that benefit to their employees. Now, with paid family medical leave, we've been talking about this for several years, and the state of Minnesota, the legislature decided in its wisdom to study the issue, and the University of Minnesota produced a study on how we could actually bring paid family medical leave to the state of Minnesota. And this bill is a first draft of that process. We have heard similar proposals in the past, and one of the things I wanted to make very clear about this particular discussion that we're beginning today is that this is the beginning of a discussion. There are many stakeholders who have a great deal of interest in this particular bill, and I've been very busy meeting with stakeholders. I continue to be, and so today I did not bring an author's amendment because I'm still gathering input and looking for places where we need to make changes in the bill, but that will be forthcoming in our next committee stop. So just wanted members to have that particular context. Paid family medical leave is an idea whose time has come in Minnesota. Our economic growth depends on greater workforce participation in the state. At the same time, we know as policymakers that the cost of childcare, particularly for infants, is unaffordable for many families and out of reach. And it's a significant barrier for people getting into the workforce. And we have a generation of people who seeing their parents begin to age and want to be there to make sure that they're helping with family health transitions, everything from having to transition into assisted living to being there for hospice to caring for a member of the family during their illness. We're looking currently at the demographics of people in Minnesota age 65 or older are starting to overtake the number of school-aged children. So the issue of aging Minnesotans is real. And as policymakers, we're being asked to solve these questions. And we're being asked as a state to put resources toward more affordable child care and accessible child care, toward elder care. Minnesotans care about each other. And Minnesota employers are working to do the right thing for their employees. While we're wrestling with these issues, we've got workers who are saying they want to provide this care for their families. They want to be able to be sure that they can be there for a sick loved one, that they can spend the necessary time with a new baby to bond and make sure that that child has the healthiest start in life. And at the same time, they want to work. It's one of the great pieces of our reputation as a state in Minnesota. We are hardworking people in Minnesota. Many Minnesota employers have recognized the business case for paid family medical leave and the pressure on our workforce in participation and balancing their life moments. And they support their employees in providing the care. It's a very Minnesota way to be. Making sure that our hardworking Minnesotans get to participate in the workforce. So we know that Minnesotans across, or people across the country are supportive of paid family medical leave. And we're following the experience of other states who have implemented paid family medical leave. And we know that employers around the state have implemented similar policies in order to retain and grow their own workforces. So it's time to make sure that all Minnesota employers and workers have access to this benefit. In our hearing today, I'll provide a high-level overview of the bill with this caveat: it's going to change. This is the start of a process to get input and to hear from stakeholders to make sure that employers, workers, government entities, and others have a seat at the table while we plan and implement this new policy. I expect an author's amendment on my next stop in the Commerce Committee, so this is the start of a conversation, and I'm glad you're here for it. So in short, the bill provides for 12 weeks of medical leave with partial wage replacement, or 12 weeks and or 12 weeks of family leave to bond with a new baby, care for a sick loved one, through an insurance program that's modeled on Minnesota's unemployment insurance. Employers and employees, as the bill is written, contribute to the pool. The intent is that the people who are benefiting from it also get to be part of building the program. It's not intended to be vacation or other types of leave. There are qualifying events that are spelled out in public policy, and that must be confirmed via a qualified healthcare provider. Like on insurance benefits, the employee is only available to get the benefit if they have been working in the last previous four quarters and earned a minimum salary. A premium is collected from employers and employees to pay for the program. We're currently working with DEED to determine the premium amounts needed to establish and maintain the program. Mr. Chair, I understand this isn't a finance committee, so that will be addressed in a future committee. So that's a brief overview of where we're starting. And as I mentioned at the outset, I'm committed to working with stakeholders to increase clarity and address concerns. And I know there are a number of people who want to testify, so I want to be sure that we leave time for that.
Thank you, Representative Halverson. Members, in your folders, you'll find a few letters from folks who are unable to testify today but still want their comments made known. Please give them the courtesy of reading those letters. Representative Halverson, Chair Halverson, would you like questions to your comments now or later?
Mr. Chair, it certainly is up to the chair. I would suggest that many of the testifiers will probably address some of the questions that are going to be coming to from the committee. So I think it might be helpful to hear from the testifiers.
Thank you. Okay. Representative Rarick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I was going to with the weather the way it is and the list of testifiers that we have on the list, we do have a number of questions that we would like to address to the author, but we're willing to wait till the end to make sure that all the testifiers can be heard. We're just wondering if, you know, we can extend the meeting a little bit beyond so that our questions can be heard, or if we can come back tonight if necessary. We do want the public to have their input, but we also want to be able to ask our questions.
Certainly, thank you. My intention is to allow some discretion at the end of the hearing today to extend it a little bit further. I'd like to finish up rather than coming back. We do have a facility prepared, if need be, to come back at 6 o'clock, but I'm trying to avoid that. We do have a long list of testifiers. We'll be keeping testimony limited to 2 minutes per testifier. Andy, our committee legislative assistant, will be notifying you when the time starts, when you have 30 seconds left, and when your time is up. So please, in your testimony, please be clear and be courteous and mindful of the testifiers that are going to be following you. Thank you. First, we have Pastor Corrine Freeman Ellis from Isaiah. And Bill McCarthy of the Minnesota AFL-CIO. Next up will be Barty Y of the Children Defense Fund of Minnesota and Elizabeth Mangert. So they're on deck. Pastor Freeman Ellis and Bill McCarthy, identify yourself for the records when speaking and proceed.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Corinne Friedman Ellis, and I'm a minister at McAllister Plymouth United Church in St. Paul, as well as a member of Isaiah, a faith-based community organizing group representing churches, mosques, childcare centers, and black barbershops throughout the state. Isaiah co-chairs the Minnesotans for Paid Family and Medical Leave Coalition with the Children's Defense Fund of Minnesota and the Minnesota AFL-CIO, who you'll hear from in just a moment. Our coalition is made up of nearly 30 organizations representing labor, faith, community, health, and small business organizations. These organizations have a combined reach of over 1 million Minnesotans. In my 3 years of living in Minnesota so far, I've noticed something about what it means to be a Minnesotan besides braving dangerous wind chills with a smile. It means taking care of our neighbors, really looking out for one another. And yet the vast majority of Minnesotans don't have access to paid family and medical leave benefits. This means every day Minnesotans face impossible choices between losing a paycheck or caring for a new child, an aging loved one, or themselves. When I talk with members of my congregation about their health and family challenges, inevitably the question comes up, how will I make ends meet while doing what I need to do for my family or for my own healing? Without paid leave, people's health, livelihood, and even their lives are at risk. We know that we can accomplish so much when we work together, but right now we're leaving people to fend for themselves. I have a six-month-old daughter at home, and I was lucky to receive 12 weeks of leave at 75% pay when she was born, which most congregations and all other small employers simply can't afford without a program like the one outlined here. For example, a member of my congregation is being induced on Friday and has to be at work today in dangerous weather more than 9 months pregnant, because if she takes a day off now, it'll take a day away from the time she gets to spend with her baby boy. No one should have to rely on luck to take the time they need to recover and care. We need to work together and do better to support families here in Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you, Pastor. Mr. McCarthy.
Thank you, Corinne. Good afternoon, Chair Sundin and committee members. My name is Bill McCarthy, president of the Minnesota AFL-CIO, representing more than 1,000 unions who represent more than 300,000 union members across the state. Minnesota's labor movement supports House File 5 because we believe all working people should have the freedom to care for themselves and the people they love without facing economic hardship. Paid medical leave will allow working Minnesotans to care for themselves, whether during pregnancy or serious medical conditions. Paid family leave will allow working Minnesotans to take the time they need to bond with a new child or care for an ailing loved one. A significant majority of Minnesotans support a paid family and medical leave program because they know it will benefit everyone in their communities. Workers will no longer be forced to choose between care and a paycheck, and employers will no longer have to bear the entire cost of an employee taking leave. Six states in the District of Columbia are successfully administering their own paid family and medical leave programs. House File 5 is a common sense solution that will work for Minnesota. With a broad statewide pool covering all workers and a modest shared premium, we can begin to solve our caregiving crisis while leveling the playing field for small businesses and all Minnesotans. Union members know that when we work together, we can accomplish great things. And working together, Minnesotans can build a state-administered paid leave insurance program where everyone contributes and everyone benefits. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. McCarthy. We have next up Barty Wai. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Certainly. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Barty Wahi, and I am the Executive Director of the Children's Defense Fund of Minnesota. Our organization pays particular attention to the needs of children who face a steeper ladder to success, including children whose families struggle to meet their basic needs, children of color and American Indian children here in Minnesota. CDF Minnesota supports paid family and medical leave in House File 5 because we see it as a critical tool in supporting the economic stability of families, while at the same time supporting healthy child and family development. It's a nice twofer. It is important to ensure that families have access to paid leave Because when new parents have access to that kind of leave, research shows that it improves maternal child maternal and child health and increases the father's involvement in his child's life. Despite the fact that most Minnesota children have their parents in the workforce, paid parental leave remains a luxury for many. Among women, one in four returns to work 2 weeks after having a baby. Those who are able to take longer leaves tend to be in higher income earners, and those with shorter leaves tend to be lower income earners. We think that this is an opportunity to look at fairness. Today you will hear powerful testimony about why paid family and medical leave is so important. You'll hear important personal stories. You'll also hear some arguments about why this leave shouldn't pass. Some employers might say these benefits already exist. However, the data shows us that many Minnesotans do not have access to this benefit, especially those who need it most. Others may say that it's too expensive. We would argue that there's already a cost at not providing this benefit to more Minnesotans. The cost in lost wages, new employee outreach and retention, health care costs associated with people who can't take care of their loved ones or themselves, impacts our economy.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next up is Ms. Elizabeth Bangert.
Yes, my name is Elizabeth Bangert, and I am a child care provider and owner of a small business here to testify in opposition to House File 5, so I'm sure I will be in the very clear minority. As a child care provider, oftentimes kids have to make choices, and I see a lot of bills that are being introduced this session that are shiny, right? They look really nice. The problem is we often make children choose between different things, and you cannot have all of the shiny objects. We have House File 1 and House File 30 that are carbon copy bills that kind of seek in opposition to this bill because you're expanding what the state pays for birth through age 5. I would also like to note that if that bill passes, 400% of the federal income guidelines for those in poverty will be accessible to this CCAP program. And that means that a family of four making less than $123,000 will have quote-unquote free child care. All of that stems from Social Security and the National Federal Block Grant. So in theory, we're going to now provide paid child care for everyone out of Social Security and our taxpayer dollars. And then because all of our families would qualify, that would also pay for paid leave. I do my best to do what I can for my employees. The state taxes make it incredibly difficult, and this is not a small business friendly state. So I would like things to change in a different manner than this, please.
Thank you. Next up we have Laura Kushner, and after that it'd be Lauren Schothorst. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you. My name is Laura Kushner. I'm the HR director for the League of Minnesota Cities. I want to quickly note that we have met with proponents of this bill, including a meeting where we brought in our HR and finance folks from cities to ask questions, and we greatly appreciated the opportunity to do that. We would like to raise a few concerns that our cities have about this legislation, which we have also shared with the author. First of all, timing for implementation. 18 months is just not long enough for cities to negotiate new union contracts and policies to coordinate our benefits with this program. Second, job protections for probationary and seasonal employees is a little problematic. For example, if a seasonal worker is hired for the months of June through August and requests 12 weeks of leave at the beginning of June, it doesn't make a lot of sense to rehire them in September when the job is done. The total of 24 weeks of paid leave was also a concern because that's nearly 6 months of leave, and that could be particularly hard for our smaller cities, which may have only 5 or 10 employees or maybe even less and don't have any coverage. We think the requirement to get a majority of employees to agree to the exemption is problematic. Cities hire seasonal and temporary employees all year long. It will be difficult to even identify who should vote and when. In addition to addressing these concerns, we suggest the following changes. We would like to see the legislation amended to allow an employer to apply to exclude by job class or by bargaining unit instead of by the entire employer. Most of our cities offer substantial benefits to unionized employees and to most of their full-time employees, and they don't want to pay for duplicative benefits. And then finally, a requirement to use paid leave first. We would like to see the bill give employers the ability to require employees to use paid leave first before applying for the benefits provided through this program. Many employees will want to do that anyway because their benefits with their employer are paid at 100% and will be higher. Thank you for the opportunity to comment on the bill. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Kushner. Lauren Schotthurst is up next, followed by Kristen Mersch and Mike Hickey. Identify yourself and proceed, please.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Lauren Schotthurst, and I serve as the Labor Management Policy Director for the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. I appreciate the opportunity to provide testimony and share the views of our members with you today. The Minnesota Chamber represents 2,300 employers and over 500,000 employees across the state in every industry. The majority of our members are small and medium-sized businesses, but our members do include many of the Minnesota Fortune 500 headquartered companies. The thing I've heard most from our members when discussing the state of Minnesota's economy and their businesses and operational challenges is this: costs of doing business are too darn high in Minnesota, and two, their employees are their most valuable asset, like family. In fact, Minnesota employers consistently receive national recognition for providing some of the best places to work. These companies are providing employees with innovative, robust, and creative benefit sets to promote wellness, build high morale, attract and retain the best talent in a competitive marketplace, and provide time and space to care for themselves and their families. It is important to point out, however, that these benefits are often unique. They take into account the nuances of the industry or the operational reality of a particular work site or the makeup of the workforce itself. We share the goal of HF5, giving Minnesotans access to the time they need to care for themselves and loved ones. The question is how to achieve that goal while balancing employer and employee needs, program scope, and costs. We have several significant concerns with the approach laid forth in the bill today. It creates a mechanism for an employee to be away from their job for almost 44% of a working year. That is a considerable new challenge. When combined with the new definition of family member, the expanded list of qualifying events, and the enhanced benefit replacement rate, they're concerned about impacts. We also have a well-documented workforce challenge that is projected to get much worse. In certain workplaces, such as hospitals or manufacturing settings that have 24/7 operations, extended leaves outlined in the bill create significant staffing challenges. Employers also rely on physical presence, particularly our small businesses, and expertise, skills, and institutional knowledge developed over the years that simply cannot be replaced or put aside for almost half of a year at any given time.
Thank you, Ms. Schotthurst. Up next is Kristen Mersch, Mike Hickey, and then Maisel May McCoy-Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and the committee. My name is Kristen Mersch. I live and work here in St. Paul. I live with my husband, Hunter, and our three young children, ages 7, 4, and 1.5. On November 1st of 2018, life as we knew it was over. It started out like any other day. Hunter went to the Y. We got the kids up and hustled them out the door like we always do when we went to work. Hunter ended up in the emergency room that afternoon with what we now know were partial seizures. After a battery of tests and an MRI, a 3-inch tumor was found on his brain. He had surgery to remove the tumor on November 4th, and a few days later, our worst fears were confirmed. It was a stage 4 glioblastoma, an aggressive brain cancer. I was off of work for several weeks to care for him following surgery and then to start his first round of treatment of chemotherapy and radiation for 6 weeks. I'd had my third child in May of 2017, and that ate up all my sick leave and personal time. I was slowly building it back up, but Hunter's stay in the hospital exhausted it, and we went through our savings quickly. By many measures, I have a generous amount of time off, and I'm so grateful for that, but most days I'm faced with the decision, can I manage work and caring for him and our kids today, or do I need to come home and take care of him after I get my kids out the door? If I take unpaid time off, what will happen to my health coverage, to our health coverage? Despite being fully insured, much of his treatment isn't covered, so how am I supposed to pay for that? And if I don't work today, how will I pay our bills? The two goals I have are in direct tension with one another: Hunter's quality of life and not losing our home. I'm relying on the generosity of others for meals and monetary donations, among other things, but the thing is that we don't know how long this is going to last. We're almost 3 months into a marathon, except we don't know how long the marathon is. A lot of things keep me up at night. Will our youngest son remember his father as a healthy, fit, engaged dad that he is? Will he remember him at all? And what is this, the progression of this disease going to look like for Hunter, and can he beat it?
Thank you, Ms. Birch. Thank you for your testimony.
Mr. Hickey, welcome.
Mr. Chairman, Mike Hickey with the National Federation of Independent Business. For those of you who don't know us, we are the state and nation's largest small business advocacy group and the top representative of small business in this country. I told Representative Helverson I wish I was at a reinsurance hearing. My tone may sound a little different, but we're strongly opposed to this bill. And we're just very concerned about the state going down a road toward micromanaging small businesses. And you're taking the first step today with this sweeping program, which needs a lot of work and is very undefined at the moment. But we're very concerned about the trend we may see in the House this year and making it very difficult for people to start small businesses. Small businesses have tremendously high failure rates. I'm looking at some of the different statistics. One was 30% fail in the first year. One was 50% fail in the first year, an SBA statistic that 66% fail in the first 10 years. And obviously, I'm a big supporter of small business. I know a lot of you are. We've all seen the new business pop up in the shopping mall by our house or on Main Street in the little towns in your district, and you drive by 6 months later and the lights are out and the sign's not up. So it is very apparent, but it is very appealing to Americans to want to start a small business, be their own boss, control their own destiny, and it's a dream for a lot of people, and they take big risks. They take a second mortgage on their home. They're maybe lucky enough to get a bank loan or borrow from a family member. 30 seconds. Okay, this is pretty challenging, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to really, really have to cut it short, but it is unique to America, and if we make the load too heavy, we are going to discourage people from starting small businesses. We're very concerned about the fact this bill is really drastically different than what we've seen in some of the other states, and the fact that it's putting a significant tax on the employers also. And the other
thank
states,
you, Mr. Hickey.
The other states could not do that.
Up next is Maisel May, McCoy, Anderson. Keith, followed by Keith Carlson and Ken Rockler.
Good afternoon. As a family member.
Can you identify yourself for the record?
I'm sorry. My name is Maisel McCoy Anderson. As a family member, I needed this policy back in 2009. I had to quit my job when my parents needed me. Their health started to fail. This was difficult on me and my family due to they were in North Carolina. I had to fly every 3 months, and during this time, my Minnesota household had to continue. I had to quit my job, file for unemployment to survive. I had to learn to take care of my parents. I thought, I got this. I'm a nurse of 38 years, duty bound. I can do this. Oh no, it was more complex than I thought. And dealing with family dynamics, my goal was to keep my parents at home as long as I could. I ended up worried, depressed, mentally sick, and enduring a whole lot of stressing over my parents and trying to run two households. The bottom line, we needed this paid family leave. It's a positive for caregivers. We shouldn't have to choose between family and a paycheck. So please, give thumbs up to this legislation.
Thank you, Ms. McCoy Anderson. Welcome, Keith Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Keith Carlson. I'm Executive Director of the Minnesota Intercounty Association that consists of 14 of the state's larger counties. First, I want to thank Representative Halverson for meeting with me and other representatives of local government to give us an opportunity to share our concerns and an opportunity to work on the issues that I will highlight here. First, I think it should be obvious, but it bears repeating that us employers who already have paid leave are being asked to pay twice. We already pay for the benefits that our employees receive, and we're being asked to pay a second time so other employers who do not offer paid leave can provide those leaves to their employees. Our employees simply are not going to generally avail themselves of this program because our paid leave is more generous than what is provided under this program. Generally, we provide 100% of pay for sick leave, family care, safety leave, so on. The cost of this bill is quite expensive at what we understand would be a 0.331% rate. Local governments alone would pay over $34 million for this bill. Our employees would pay a commensurate amount, and they will be looking to make that up at the bargaining table since their net pay will go down by that amount. We'll either have to raise property taxes or, in the instance of school districts, they will be coming to you looking for school aid, additional school aid to offset those costs since they do not have levy authority. We already provide most of the leaves contemplated under this bill, and so it's, again, redundant. We are very concerned about the lack of coordination or lack of offset against FMLA or the state's pregnancy or parenting leave. Section 3 of this bill provides there's no offset, unlike our paid leave, which does offset it. As a consequence, a parent could take an additional 12 weeks leave with House File 5's paid benefits and receive nothing. There's also stacking issues that I think have already been identified. And finally, again, I would repeat what the league has already said, that employees should be required to take their paid leave first.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson. Next up, Ken Rockler, followed by Angela Byrne and Anna Tessenter. Mr. Rockler.
Chairman Sundin, members of the committee, Ken Rockler, former lobbyist, but I'm here just as a citizen today. I've testified in the past in favor of raises in minimum wage. When I owned a restaurant, we provided, 40 years ago, we provided health insurance, profit sharing, and paid vacation. I'm not aware of any peers that did it at the time. And I'm sympathetic, as I think most people are, to the benefits that might come from this. But I'm here to alarm you, I guess, about what I consider the law of unintended consequences. 30 years ago, you couldn't check your groceries through a line that had no human beings. Today, it's common at Cub, Target, and a lot of other places. I'm sure many of you already do this. 30 years ago, Amazon didn't have a prototype store with no live employees. You may have seen that on 60 Minutes. There's been a lot of articles alluding to McDonald's trying to eliminate staff. I drove out to Eagan to Silver Bell Road and Highway 13 last Monday, and I was amazed. They had four kiosks. While I sat there, every single person under 30 used the kiosk, and those that were above it, I don't know, half and half at that time. Worse yet, I saw on CNBC that in order to eliminate employees, McDonald's now is offering incentives if you order online that you cannot get if you order live at the counter. Consider the amount of mail and related jobs with everything being done online. Last week, a 60-minute segment was on about truckers being eliminated. I know that the Teamsters Union is aware of that problem. Finally, if you frequent Olive Garden, you may have noticed the last 3 years they've eliminated 60% of their staff. If you don't believe that this is a potential problem, ask your gas station attendant the next time he or she fills up your tank. Most of you probably haven't seen that for a long time. Thanks for allowing me to testify.
Thank you, Mr. Rockler. Angela Byrne.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, committee members. Thank you. My name is Angela Byrne, and I'm a proud state employee and MAPE member from Roseville. I have not received a full annual salary since 2013. I don't anticipate receiving a full annual salary until 2020. I gave birth to my baby, Henry, in October of 2014. We were both healthy, and my return to work went as planned. It was difficult balancing typical seasonal illnesses in our house with my depleted leave accrual, but we made do. In February 2016, at age 31, with a 16-month-old toddler, I was thrust into the sandwich generation in the worst way. My mother, Robin, was diagnosed with stage 3B cancer and a sepsis infection that nearly killed her. Despite having small accrued time off balances, I applied for FMLA and moved in with mom. The responsibilities continued after I returned to work from FMLA throughout 2016 and 2017. With seemingly endless follow-ups, tests, and medications, plus repeat hospitalizations, and that doesn't even count all of the time fighting with multiple insurances and Social Security Disability Determination Services. The nightmare ultimately ended after my third FMLA and a second round of treatment that left her weak enough to succumb to pneumonia on February 11th, 2018. She was 57. To add to the cruelty of the situation, after bereavement, I was out of FMLA and accrued paid time off to finish handling her final arrangements. I took what little leave I could as I accrued it, but almost all of the time I spent caring for mom and now her estate in these last 3 years has been unpaid. My husband and I are extraordinarily fortunate that we could weather this storm without destroying our long-term financial health. However, I am painfully aware of how easily so many people are put into financial jeopardy. My mom was one of those people. She went back to work as a baker and a restaurant hostess just 2 weeks after giving birth to me because that's all the unpaid time she could afford. She had nearly zero support to start a family. It's not lost on me that this hearing comes close to the first anniversary of her death. I'm here for her and all of the people out there like her. Let's take care of our neighbors and get this done this session. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Byrne. Anna Center, followed by Jill Larson and Sarah Papenberg. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Good afternoon, Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Anna Santier, owner of Two Buddies Green Cleaning in Minneapolis. We have been around since 2007. We employ 160 full and part-time cleaners and office staff, mostly female. Small businesses employ half the state, and I also know that when I can recruit and retain employees, just like the big dogs, when I can offer similar benefits that they do. As a small business owner, I know my business will thrive and grow when we can take care of our staff. We have a very loyal employee base because they know Two Buddies will do whatever we can to support them. This is one of the main reasons I attract employees, great employees. However, currently we can't afford to offer the length of paid leave to our office staff or cleaners that is offered in this bill and offered by bigger companies I compete with for talent. When I first heard about the legislation, I supported it in theory because I believe everyone should have access to maternity, paternity, family leave, not just 14% of the state. Everyone should have that. When I was concerned about cost, because for me with 160 people, 20 of them full time, that's real. I have to do some math. When I did the cost analysis using the 0.31 payroll tax number, same but better than what I have now as far as the results, as far as cost for me and my company. And then I researched practices of bigger companies and the states who have done this. This is an innovation, and it makes the retention tool that family leave is affordable for small businesses. One of the biggest factors in expense for me is turnover and retention. I found that the benefits, recruiting, and retention, not the goodness of hearts, is why large corporations offer these benefits. So I have no idea where the chamber is getting some of their inflammatory numbers and things I've seen. They do not represent me. My company is living proof that when you treat people well, you profit. I can't treat people as well. This is an insurance pool is what this is. So he's calling it tax and things that scare people. This is an insurance pool and makes something like this possible. The actual research says it's going to help grow our state's economy, improve the lives of Minnesotans. States where it's passed, the program has been in place. I have this. A lot of you in this room have this. Please, this is something we all need to look at, like our conscience, not just fact sheets and profit.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Jill Larson, please come to the table, identify yourself, and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. I am Jill Larson with the Minnesota Business Partnership. Our members are generally large employers who do provide good benefits, including many different types of paid leave. I also want to thank Representative Halverson for meeting with us and listening to our concerns and being so open to continuing the dialogue on this issue. We do appreciate and understand the goal of this proposal. As was mentioned before, we do provide paid leave to our employees because it is something that we do to retain and recruit folks. So, but that said, we do have some major concerns about the scope of the proposal, the funding mechanism, and how it would actually be implemented. It does create a new state-run insurance program, and that is going to be a new department with Indeed, new IT, new claims processing system. So we are concerned about the startup costs, the long-term costs. There's only a handful of other states that have ever done this, and most of those states already had existing infrastructure in place that they just built upon. Minnesota would have to build this from scratch, so we have some concerns about how that would work. And the proposal does vary quite a bit from the handful of other states that have this. The benefit levels are much higher than in other states. Who qualifies, the definition of who qualifies is concerning. It's so broadly defined that we are wondering how it would actually be administered. the language that would allow the employer to be excluded is so burdensome that probably no employer would be excluded, even if they provided the same benefit and they'd still pay the tax. As mentioned by Mr. Carlson, there's no alignment with the current Family Medical Leave Act. That is a huge administrative cost. And I know this isn't the tax committee or the Ways and Means Committee, but the funding mechanism is a real concern for us. Our employers and our employees will be paying a tax for a benefit they already receive and that they will probably not lose. So again, thank you for continuing to talk with us, and I appreciate the committee's time.
Thank you. Sarah Pippenberg. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Sure. Well, thank you for listening to me today. My name is Sarah Pippenberg, and I own Vinaigrette, an olive oil and retail vinegar store in Minneapolis, Excelsior, and an opening up a location in Navarre. Having had my small business for 10 years now, I would like to say on behalf of the chamber, because I'm a member of a number of chambers, this isn't actually true. Small businesses want this. I have an employee, 65 years old, who fell last year and broke both arms. During her six-week time, I paid her because it was the right thing to do. But I made the decision not to then pay my mortgage. This program gives me an opportunity at a relatively low rate to be able to provide benefits for not only my 65-year-old employee who fell and is facing hip replacement February 19th, going to be out for 10 weeks, but also for my employee whose mother has been diagnosed with early onset dementia. This program also allows me as a business owner to pay in for myself, because as a mother of three, after my second child, I went to back to work after 7 days, and after my third child, went to back to work after 11 days. I represent small businesses. I represent, I've employed numerous Minnesotans, and this gives me the option to pay in. And it, as far as I'm concerned, is like as a payroll tax, it's minimal in comparison to having to come up with over $2,000 when Linda was out because I didn't have the opportunity to pay for. You will hear misunderstandings. This is not a mandate. This is an insurance policy, so we have access to benefits, which we as business owners cannot afford. The other piece is, for people that have been talking, I've heard a few things, businesses have the opportunity to opt out. So if you've got great benefits, perfect. Prove it, opt out, but give me, a small business owner, the opportunity to do right by my employees. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Pippenberg. Next up, we have Dr. Brian Muthula, and after that, Robin Rowan. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Dr. Brian Muthiala. I'm an assistant professor in the Department of Medicine at the University of Minnesota Medical School. I'm an internist and a pediatrician and a member of Minnesota Doctors for Health Equity and a lifelong Minnesotan. And I want to talk today about the importance of paid family medical leave for all Minnesotans. This is an essential issue. This is a family-first policy that will improve the lives of Minnesotans across the state. In particular, paid leave will help our most marginalized families thrive under challenging circumstances. Currently, as many of you know, most low-wage earners in Minnesota do not have access to this, and communities with high rates of poverty and discrimination are more likely to lack access to paid sick and family leave. As a physician and as a pediatrician, I see every day families that are struggling to care for their family members as well as trying to put food on the table and keep lights on. I have patients that balance medication costs, nursing home costs, doctor visits, dialysis costs, all of these things that none of us can predict will happen, balancing those with paying for heat, rent, food, all the things to live and to survive. Paid medical leave would be truly life-changing for families across this state. I'm a physician, I'm a professor, but I'm here today to also share my experience as a new parent. My son, Ravi, turned 2 weeks old a few days ago. He's very cute. I have pictures if you'd like to see them. He was born 3 weeks early. He's now at home, but when he was born, he was struggling with feeds. He lost a lot of weight. He's been seen already 4 times in clinic, has had multiple clinic visits, but being able to be there to support him, my wife, is priceless. I received 2 weeks of leave, which is barely adequate, but I've had the generosity of my friends, community, coworkers, and family to help me. But generosity is no substitute for justice. paid family medical leave would be one step towards a more equitable and family-focused Minnesota for years to come. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Doctor. And believe it or not, I was cute when I was little, too.
I'd like to see your photos.
No one's buying it.
Thank you. Robin Rowan, thank you. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I like to think we're all still cute. I'm the executive director of the Minnesota Insurance and Financial Services Council, or MFSI. MFSI members provide financial security, promote the financial security of Minnesotans by providing life, disability, long-term care insurance, as well as annuities and other retirement plans. We support over 50,000 jobs in Minnesota, and our agents and financial advisors are located in every corner of the state. MFSI members are also employers, and so we share some of the concerns that were expressed previously. But because of the shortness of the time, I'm going to focus my comments on the areas where the impact on our industry is unique. The first is the fact that House File 5 applies to independent contractors. Most insurance companies distribute their product through agents and financial advisors. They're independent contractors and small business owners, and this would be a drastic change in the way that we do business by providing benefits to those independent contractors. Second is the opt-out provision. Basically, House File 5, as it's currently written, penalizes employers for providing their own benefits. If they want to continue to offer these paid family leave and medical benefits, they would also have to pay the tax. And that's going to make it very unlikely that they continue to do so. The problem with that is twofold. The first is that there is actually a thriving short-term medical insurance, disability insurance market in Minnesota. Those plans are available. They're affordable. They can be offered to businesses as small as just two people. They also, employers often offer much richer benefits than the ones that are in House File 5. And if they're going to have to pay the payroll tax on top of the benefits they're already offering, they're very unlikely to do that. And so our concern is that because the opt-out provision is so burdensome, you are going to disrupt a very healthy market. On the one hand, there's also an emerging market for fully insured family leave products that's brand new. So I look forward to working with Chair Halverson on the bill, and thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Rowan. This is a public hearing. If there are any other members of the public that wish to voice their views on the House File 5, now would be the time. Okay, seeing none, we can open this up for committee questions. First of all, we have Representative Rarick, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was wondering if by any chance there's a representative from Deed here. I see that this is going to be administered by Deed, and wondering if they've had any chance to look at how they would put this together and if the time frame set up in this bill can, if they can accomplish it and manage it in that amount of time.
Thank you. I see some movement back there. Is that a Deed person?
Actually, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Darielle Dannon is with Deed. I'm with the University of Minnesota. I conducted the research in 2016, so I'm just up here.
Representative Rarick, I'm certain we're covered here, so please take a testifier as chair and identify yourselves and be ready for questions.
Hi, my name is Darielle Dannon. I'm the Government Relations Director at Deed. Yes, we're very aware that we are the star of the show for this one. I think, you know, I had a chance to talk with the bill author a little bit earlier this week, and I think I can just say that it's a very complicated bill, so our staff are still in the process of really going through doing an appropriate analysis. I think I want to make sure the committee is also aware that in addition to Deed and, of course, Minute doing that work, in fact, actually Deed internally is, I think, about done with our analysis. But, of course, Minute will be the ones who are tasked with building the IT system or systems and user interface associated with this bill. So they're in the process of doing their analysis right now. And then we have, of course, I think six other state agencies that will be impacted by this as well. So I think I mostly came here to beg for your patience as we get through that process, because we are really, you know, obviously trying to make sure that we do that in a fair and clear manner so that the members of the committee have the information you need in front of you.
Representative Rick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, do you believe that the time frame is manageable, or do you think you would be able, I mean, I would think that especially the IT part would struggle to meet this time frame, but do you think your agency would be able to pull your end of it together?
You know, as we're doing the analysis, we certainly write our, as we do the analysis, we certainly write our fiscal notes to the bill. So we are attempting to do an analysis of what it would take to comply with the timeline in the bill. I think I would relate to the committee that if you looked at other states, a timeline a little bit longer has been the norm. So that is, of course, up to you. But you might look to other states on kind of that timeline as you think about how capable we might be and, of course, Minute might be in putting that work together.
Mr. Chair, if I make a comment.
Representative Chair Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Rarick, for your question. I think the timeline is one of the things that we're working most quickly on with regard to getting input from stakeholders to find out what a reasonable timeline is. And so I would anticipate that is something that we'll be looking at and adjusting as we go through our committee process. I think that's a really important point to raise. So thanks.
Thank you, Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Halverson, we hear a lot about how employers are moving towards kind of the gig economy or contract employees. How would this legislation affect contract employees?
Mr. Chair and Representative Cagle, thank you for the question.
Halverson.
I want to also introduce Deb Fitzpatrick from the University of Minnesota, who's providing some technical assistance to us on this legislation, so she can fill in where I cannot. But currently, the way that the bill is written, contract employees would be included in the legislation. And yes, thank you.
And Mr. Chair, I think
Representative Cagle.
I really encourage people to support this. As most of you know, I just had a baby 8 weeks ago today. You know, it was hard. I had a lot of complications through the pregnancy, was in the hospital for 3 days before they went in for an emergency C-section, and then had a lot of really scary complications afterwards, too. I was in the hospital for over a week after, and so it's tough. And so I was really lucky that my husband was able to save up 4 weeks of PTO because he works in St. Paul and has mandated PTO. And he, you know, having him there with me was probably one of the biggest lifesavers of my sanity that I could imagine. And, you know, if I didn't have that time off to stay home with my baby, and I'm lucky that I can bring her with me a lot of the time, but it's definitely one of the hardest things that I think I've ever done. And so having that time to have with her and my husband was really amazing, and having that benefit of knowing that we would have some income during that time was really, really amazing. And I also worked the day up until my induction because I did not want to lose any hours that I would have during that time. So I want to thank you very much for bringing this legislation forward, and I want to encourage everybody to support it.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Fabian, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Chair Halverson, excuse me. Minute was mentioned by the testimony from Deed. You've been around here for a few years and seen some of the things that are going on with regards to MNLARS and MNsure and Minute and so forth. I don't have a whole lot of confidence that Minute is going to be able to handle this. What is your intentions with this bill? I mean, we're talking about, I believe, maybe 3.5 million people involved here. How do you envision this moving forward? Somebody in the private sector doing this or Minute?
Mr. Chair.
Chair Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Fabian. Making sure that the program is implementable is a major goal of this legislation, and I think that that's why the timeline issue is so important, that we have to make sure that we can effectively implement the program. And so working with all the state agencies who are going to be involved is a primary goal.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chair Halverson, we were told by MNLARS a year in advance that they were ready for the rollout. So in working with the different agencies and so forth, how are you going to
guarantee or roll, do some sort of a preliminary rollout to make sure that it actually does work. And again, I preface my comments by, I mean, we have a history of things not working.
Chair Halverson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Fabian, you're absolutely right. Kicking the tires is going to be incredibly important, as well as checking under the hood, because this benefit is so important to Minnesota workers, and what we're hearing in terms of what the needs are so important. I would say that with regard to our previous experiences in the state, there have been some pretty significant changes that were underway at the agencies with regard to approaches, staffing, testing, communication. And now we have a new administration and new commissioners as well. So we are continuing to improve on those processes at the state level and being in contact with the commissioners.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Halverson, for businesses that are, and maybe you can explain the opt-out to me, but for businesses that are already kind of meeting the requirements, how do they opt out, and then will they and their employees continue to be taxed to pay for this program?
Mr. Chair.
Chair Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Fabian. I will give brief comments and let Professor Fitzpatrick fill in if she can provide more clarity. The way the bill is currently structured, and I will provide that caveat with every statement that I make, because stakeholder engagement is really important on this. And this particular provision that you're talking about, the opt-out provision, is something that is really important that we get right. We know that there are a lot of employers in Minnesota that are able to give benefits to workers. These are typically higher paid workers, typically workers with more predictable job functions and scheduling. And so folks who are lower paid typically don't get to see these kinds of benefits to take care of their family members. And small businesses are looking for those kinds of opportunities. However, if a company does choose to opt out and meets or exceeds standards, that's something that is currently available in the bill. Currently, it's written as a opt-out proposal that's approved by employees, but I think that we've had some conversations that is language that we're working on stakeholders with to further refine and make it work for Minnesota employers. I think that Minnesota employers have shown the business case for paid family medical leave, and a lot of them are doing these benefits. And we've had conversations about equal benefits really are, because nothing's ever apples to apples, right? So how do we make those kinds of calculations, I think, is going to be really important for us in our next iteration of the bill. And I think that Ms. Fitzpatrick wants to.
Mr. Chair.
Can you identify yourself for the record?
Hi, my name is Deborah Fitzpatrick. I co-direct the Center on Women, Gender, and Public Policy at the Humphrey School, and had the contract in 2016 from the state to do a design and implementation study related to this issue. So that study really required me to really look deeply at how other states have implemented this kind of a program and look at how that might map on to Minnesota infrastructure. So just as background, but I did want to address Representative Fabian's question about the premiums, because there's a blank premium in the bill right now, but in the states that do have these opt-out provisions, that to the extent that there is some kind of a commitment from those opting out employers, it's a much, much smaller premium. So it's in some of the states, it's like 0.5% of what the normal premium would be. And the idea is that that's to cover the oversight costs. Employers apply to deed the administering agency, make a case for how their benefits are similar or better, and then receive that approval from the agency. And so, again, it's a blank in the bill now, but it is definitely not envisioned that would be anywhere near the same level of kind of financial commitment on the part of employers. And then just quickly, I think the provisions in the bill are very similar to New Jersey, and New Jersey has about 20% of their employers that opt out for the medical part of the program. And I guess it's also important to note within the bill as it's structured now, employers would be able to opt out for either the family leave part or the medical leave part. And as was mentioned by the insurers earlier, obviously there's a far more robust kind of market currently for those medical leave benefits. So more employers might be in a position to opt out there. So.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So in your study, I represent I get about as far away from the capital as you possibly can in Minnesota. And we have obviously very, very rural. How do you envision this impacting our small town hardware stores and pharmacies and so forth? If somebody is a pharmacy tech, okay, what does your study do to show our hospitals and clinics? We had a doctor testify. I appreciate that. It's a great profession. They're awesome people. But we already have a tremendously difficult time recruiting and retaining nurses and doctors and so forth. If someone leaves, how do you schedule? How do you retain? How do you replace those people when they're gone in these types of jobs that are so critical to our small towns? We're talking about caring for people. This is probably some of the ultimate care that we have. And how do we do that?
Yes, thank you, Professor. Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I did also, just to in answer to your question, did a little bit of a follow-up study over the last year, really looking at how this issue impacts rural communities in the state. So my car didn't start, so I got a ride from somebody else, so I left my copies in the car. So, but there's some floating around, so I encourage you to take a look at that. I think that the fact is that workers and employers are already dealing with the need for these leaves now. And so that is what I think we heard in rural places. You know, when somebody has a new baby, for example, and it's a physician, a tech at the local drugstore, for example, employers do want to do what's best for their workers, and they really are struggling, in particular in rural communities, to figure out how can I manage this situation. I think the other thing that's really important to note is that this social insurance model does at least provide some resources for those employers to hire somebody temporarily or pay somebody overtime or to otherwise manage the leave, whereas now they're kind of on their own to figure that out, right? They either don't allow that employee, that really valued employee, to take that leave, or they do and they can't pay them. I think this program would at least give them some additional tools, and when it's kind of described to people or the way it works, the way it's an insurance model, the way it would free up resources for that employer to manage the situation. I think it's also really important to acknowledge in the other states, you know, this hasn't really resulted in an exponential increase in the kind of leaves that people are taking. It's increased some of the length a little bit, but mostly it's impacted people's financial capacity during those leaves, as well as the employer's financial capacity, because to the extent that small employers, and again, I did many stakeholder interviews throughout rural Minnesota for the study that I just completed. Those employers that do pay, like the one who testified earlier, then they're on the hook to also figure out how to cover the work at the same time that they're providing that sick leave. So I think the bottom line is that it's important to acknowledge that these needs are out there right now. We're not creating new needs. This is just another tool, I think, for all kinds of employers, rural ones in particular, though, small ones in particular, though, to be able to manage the situation better than they do now.
And Mr. Chair, may I add?
Chair Holverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Fabian, your question is a really important one. I learned a lot about the needs in rural Minnesota based on these studies. And what I was surprised to learn is that more than half of Minnesotans, entirely rural counties, 90% or more of mothers with children have mothers under with children under six are in the workforce. So you have a lot of folks in greater Minnesota who are dealing with this very serious issue of making sure that they can care for their kids, care for new babies. There's also the issue of time. Having lived in rural Minnesota and rural North Dakota, you know, anything that's under an hour away is close, right? And so we actually know that it's harder and harder. The distances to get medical care in greater Minnesota are hitting rural communities harder. And so that's time. That's a full-day trip very often to seek medical care. And so time in greater Minnesota is a very big deal as well. And then the employers in greater Minnesota are the least likely to, and this is rural areas, I believe, around the country, but are least likely to be able to provide these kinds of benefits. So creating an insurance program where employers can provide some insurance and backup, because I have no doubt that employers really want to see their employees continue to thrive and do well and take care of their babies.
Thank you, Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Real quickly, so, and I agree with what you're trying to do, but, I mean, I live in rural Minnesota, and employers only have so much that they can put into what I would call the pie that makes up compensation. And so ultimately what I'm worried about in this is that because of the limited resources that are available to put into that small hardware store in Greenbush, Minnesota, in terms of employee benefits, now we're going to be taking benefits away from something else. It might be a pay increase. It might be other things. So I hope that you'll take these things into consideration and recognize that these businesses are struggling already. We heard other testimony. It's not easy out there, and when mothers are in the workforce, you're exactly right, they are. And then when they are not in the workforce, and I understand it, I'm not criticizing it, but the business owner is then going to have to find somebody else to do that, and that's extremely hard because there are not very many replacements out there. Thank you.
Representative Vogel. Oh,
thank you, Mr. Chair. Probably to Chair. As I went through the bill, there was references to the unemployment compensation fund as well as the insurance thing. And so there, I just want to clarify, is this a tax and a fund, or is this a premium and an insurance product?
Chair Halverson.
Mr. Chair, you ask an intriguing question. For the purposes of the goals of this bill, we're creating an insurance fund so that all employers and all employees can gain a benefit, can call in the benefit when they need to. I think that if you want to talk about how we technically define laws, you know, technically this is going to see light in the tax committee. So that's the way that we define premiums in for this particular purpose.
So, Mr. Chair.
Representative Vogel.
So we're calling this an insurance product, but it's really a tax?
Chair Halverson.
Mr. Chair, it is an insurance product, so we're modeling it after unemployment insurance. We want to be sure that there is a pool available so that people who need a benefit can get the benefit, just like on unemployment insurance. And if Professor Fitzpatrick has anything to add to that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Vogel, yeah, I think that's a good characterization. I think the idea, though, of UI is brought up in the bill in many places because we are trying to build on the existing infrastructure as much as possible to make it as seamless for employers and workers so that we're, again, to the extent we can get some efficiencies from building on our existing infrastructure, I think that's the goal.
Thank you.
Representative Thank you, Mr. Vogel. Chair. Well, I understood that it was the workman's comp, or I'm sorry, the unemployment compensation fund, and that it's a tax, that it's not an insurance product, that unemployment is a tax. When the employer submits the money, the form, I am nearly positive, says unemployment tax. Isn't that correct?
Chair Halverson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Vogel, that may be true in the way that the federal government defines the policy, but I think how this works out in practice, and we do call it unemployment insurance fund, it works out in practice like a an insurance fund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I'm still confused, and I think
Vogel, yes.
I'm sorry. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it could be very confusing to the public if we're going to call this an insurance, because what we're really talking about apparently is a tax. And my feeling is if we're going to call it insurance, then we should hold it to the same standard as we held other insurance companies. So the question is, in here, it's called premium, it's called insurance, just like you would if you were buying a disability policy. Are you going to hold this to the same standards that you would an insurance company coming into the Commerce Department and putting together an insurance policy or plan?
Representative Chair Holverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Vogel. You are exactly right. Insurance, by definition, is a pool of money that's set aside for the unexpected. And we want employers to be able to have a fund of money for the unexpected with their employee population. This bill is complicated, but we know how complicated life is. And anybody who's an employer in the room, anybody who is a family member in the room, has experienced, very often what could be a qualifying incident under this bill. And so we want to be sure that employers have that opportunity to provide that benefit through this pooled fund. And so that is insurance. And I think that to the earlier point that we were making when Deed was at the table, that solvency is going to be important. We want to be sure that as we're talking about when this fund is going to be up and running, to have the funds available, to have the projections available so that we can meet what the needs of Minnesotans are. So thank you.
Representative Detmer. Oh, I'm sorry, did you have one more?
I did.
Okay, Representative Vogel,
indulge me. So, and I had a few other questions, but it seems it's time to move on, I guess, unfortunately. So does that mean that as part of this bill, which currently I couldn't find it in there, that you're going to provide actuarial studies, look at anti-selection, underwriting, coordination of benefits, and all those things like an insurance company would, so that we're making sure that, especially as was brought up, maybe with some of the issues that you're already going to face relative to coming up with a software, that we're also on the same level as insurance companies, because we did hear that the private sector is looking at developing these products, and it would be terribly unfair if we put in place something using the standards that we just decide as a government, and then the insurance companies have to go through the same process. So I guess just looking for a commitment that as this thing matures, this bill matures, that there'll be the same standards applied to this insurance company as would any other insurance company.
Chair Holverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Vogel. I think that you definitely have my commitment to make sure that we look at issues around solvency. And when we look at the goal of being aligned with unemployment insurance, and that's the model, and looking at the way other states have done it in order to maintain solvency, that's a priority of this particular bill and what we're asking for from the agencies.
So, Mr. Chair, I'm hearing then that we are actually going to treat this as an insurance product. And because, and the concern, Mr. Chair, is, like I said, we just heard from the insurance representative that there are private sector companies trying to develop this product as well. And if we're going to just do it as kind of a government product that may or may not have to adhere to those same standards, really not fair to them, and it would certainly take away from the competitiveness in the marketplace. And as I was going through the bill, it looks like the parameters for the rate changes are already in there. If you look at lines 21.7, it talks about that, stating the rate parameters. It's talking from 20.27 to 20.32 about rate adjustments. So my sense is that there's been a lot of these steps skipped already. And I think just out of fairness for the private sector that we should have a commitment saying that if we're going to invent an insurance product, that at least we as a state have to be on equal ground with those as a company. So I'm not sure if I'm going to get that answer, but that's where I'm going with this, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. I think Chair Holverson understands your position and is willing to work with you on this. I'm certain of that.
Thank you.
Representative Detmer.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Holverson, in your comments that you made earlier, you mentioned four states that currently have such a program, like California, New Jersey, Rhode Island, and New York. And we look at Washington and Massachusetts are starting to look at this program. The family leave portion of those programs are funded by the payroll tax only. Okay, the Minnesota proposal is you're looking at payroll tax on employees and employers. Now, what happens when, say, this goes through, and employer will say two, three employers are gone? That employer still is going to have to hire substitutes to come in and take over. How is that employer going to be paid back for hiring more people to cover for the people that are on paid leave?
Chair Halverson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Detmer, we are not replacing employer wages. We are enabling employers to replace the partial wages of people who need to take time off. I think that the way that this is structured, and one of the things I want to be very clear about, is that Minnesotans have a reputation of working very hard, being dedicated employees, and showing up and getting the work done when they need to. There's no incentive in this bill for abuse. People aren't getting paid to just take time away from work. It would surprise me if there is an employer out there when faced with an employee who has a new baby that wouldn't be anticipating their need to take time off of work, whether it's paid or unpaid. What motivates the employees to get back to work, of course, is the need to make sure that their wages are being replaced. And sometimes that instigates people coming back before they're healed from childbirth, or coming back before they've had a chance to bond with the baby. And the thought of turning over your two-week-old to somebody to take care of it is when it's not you. If you've given birth to, you know, being across the room from your baby 2 weeks from childbirth is far, as opposed to being, you know, across the city. So I think that we have to keep in mind what people are leaving for, that this is not a vacation program. It's something that employers are already dealing with. What they don't have is the capability for their employees to get wage replacements in order to incent them to make sure that they can continue to work and can enter the workforce.
Mr. Chair, a follow-up. You know, those four existing states, they already have an existing state temporary disability programs. Minnesota does not. And creating a new insurance program from the ground up is what would have to happen here. And you look at Washington and Massachusetts, they're starting that process of starting from the ground up. How long do you think it's going to take Minnesota to put something like that together?
Chair Olveson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Detmer, you're asking a magic question, but the good news is that we've got state agencies and resources from the University of Minnesota that are helping us answer that question, both with the experience from other states, but also with a sense of Minnesota employment needs currently.
Do you have anything? Mr. Chair.
Professor.
Just wanted to add to that. Obviously, yes, Massachusetts and Washington State were similarly situated to Minnesota, having to build a whole new system. Washington State has just started collecting the premiums within their program. I think that we will benefit significantly from their experiences and be able to build on kind of what they have learned as part of that process. I think that's really an asset for us as a state going forward.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Detmer.
And, I think Washington State started in 2008 putting money aside. And am I correct on that?
Mr. Chair, members, they did pass a law in 2008, but it wasn't funded, so they did not start putting money aside. So that bill, that legislation kind of sat there for a number of years, and then again a couple years ago they passed the new program in 2017 and have begun the implementation process on that now.
And, Mr. Chair, one last question. Is,
Representative Detmer.
Are there any, with this program, are there any privacy concerns in terms of personal data of the employees, because you're allowing Deed to audit the private information about private employers and benefits. And what about this employee data that's going to be looked at by Deed?
Chair Halverson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Detmer, much like the unemployment insurance, there is data that is shared between agencies. All of that data is classified as private and protected by HIPAA.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you.
Representative Lippert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Chair Halverson and Professor Fitzpatrick. In my other work, I'm a pastor, and I grew up in a town of 700 people. I've served intentionally in small communities as a pastor for 16 years. And it sure feels like for my clergy staff and other pastors that we talk to, it feels like caregiving needs are intensifying. Just feels like we're bouncing from one sort of caregiving crisis within our congregation to another, helping families navigate what they're facing or providing whatever support we can. So it feels like there's a trend of increased needs for caregiving that we're experiencing. And I'm wondering, Professor, if your research related to this bill bears that out in any way, or if you can give us a sense of where we may be going as far as caregiving needs are concerned.
Professor Fitzpatrick.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, yes, absolutely. The research that's floating around, again, does show that in many ways, greater Minnesota is experiencing a greater need for paid leaves, and that is in part due to the aging population, which is aging more quickly in rural areas, child care shortages, elder care shortages, shortages of long-term care, you know, for people with disabilities. All of those kind of caregiving situations are intensifying in rural areas of our state. And that, coupled with the statistic that Representative Halverson shared earlier about the level of workforce participation of particularly mothers in rural areas of our state, means that we have not only challenges with paid caregiving in our rural communities, we have increasing challenges with unpaid caregiving capacity. You know, in the old days, we used to have more people who weren't in the paid labor force full time available to take on these caregiving responsibilities. We have decreased capacity in that way, but also these real challenges with finding paid care. And so I think absolutely the research shows, and then again, that's coupled with the fact that rural employers are struggling to help their workers to the extent that they really want to do that. And so I think that's really created a kind of a confluence of events that's creating, an extra big challenge in our rural communities.
Representative Lippert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just share with the committee that I've been thinking about a story throughout these proceedings of a couple from my congregation. He just recently retired, was very excited about retirement, and shortly after retiring, found out that he had early onset dementia that was progressing very rapidly. His spouse was still working at the grocery store and couldn't afford to take time off from her job, so she's trying to hold together caring for her husband and working full-time. And then very shortly after that, realized that her husband wasn't safe to be at home by himself. So she started organizing her whole neighborhood, organizing our whole congregation, asking people to take shifts to care for her husband so she could keep working. And she was absolutely on the brink this whole time, this whole transition, until finally they could find a care facility that was appropriate for his needs. But I sat with them multiple times, wishing there was something concrete beyond a prayer that I could offer them. And it seems to me that this policy would serve the people I serve. And so I'm very excited about this conversation and excited to support it.
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question for Professor Fitzpatrick. We had heard earlier from Ms. Santier from Two Betties about some of the positive effects on employers that this legislation could bear. And you mentioned in your research brief around economic stability in rural Minnesota that that these programs have had neutral or positive effects on employers. And so are there some recurring themes that you found in your research that employers were reporting in terms of the positive effects?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the research Representative Hornstein that you're referring to comes from the states that have had these programs in a place for quite a while. Yes, that research does show that there are, you know, there's productivity, morale boosts for workers. There are retention benefits for employers. That are kind of the main kind of positive impacts of those policies in those states. This holds true for the kinds of employers that I know a lot of folks are worried about, retailers, manufacturers, others that, you know, do face some of the challenges that Representative Fabian identified in terms of, you know, challenges with, you know, replacing workers. But again, the fact is that our employers and workers are dealing with these challenges now, and I think that they're definitely, the research is showing that those positive effects are occurring in some of the states with programs in place now.
Mr. Chair, I just thank you for that, Professor. And I, you know, as I've, you know, researched this issue a little, I was struck, you know, we heard about the positive effects in these other states, the six U.S. states and the District of Columbia, but I was struck that it's only the United States and Papua New Guinea that don't have a program like this in the entire world. And, you know, here we are the wealthiest, one of the wealthiest, if not the wealthiest country in the history of humankind, and the rest of the world has this, and we don't. And that's why, Chair Halverson, I think you're legislation is so timely and so urgent, and I hope we can continue to move forward with this, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative. We've got Representative Meckland.
Thank you, Chair. This is for both Representative Halverson as well as Professor. It includes independent contractor as being covered by this. So if as an independent contractor I bill somebody, and I may bill two different people in one day depending on my day, are you billing my gross bill, or are you charging this percentage of my gross billing amount, or the part that ends up becoming the net wage? And how are you going to determine that?
Professor.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I think contractors are covered in the bill in two different ways. It would depend to some extent on the way that they are paid. So the way that the bill is structured currently, it does require if an employer is using 50% or more of their payroll is contractors, then they treat those contractors like employees for purposes of the bill, so that employer that's hiring those contractors, business that's hiring those contractors would be paying into the premium into the state fund on behalf of those contractors. So it would be based, I guess, on their contract. The other way that contractors could be covered under this bill is that they could opt in to the state program as a self-employed person. So some contractors may fall into that category. They're going to make a decision whether or not they want to commit to being in the program for 2 years. And then in other states do have that kind of self-employed opt-in option. They work with their Department of Revenue to look at 1099 income from the prior year, or revenue tax, the tax situation from the prior year to determine what benefits that contractor would be eligible for, but also kind of what their contribution to the state program would be. Obviously, there would be some rulemaking and, you know, provisions that would have to be developed by deed around the particulars of that. But again, we do have experiences of the other states that have a similar opt-in provision for self-employed folks to learn from.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Meckland. Representative Rarick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a couple points. I'm going to ask one question, and then the rest I will ask that I can work with you, Representative Halverson, outside of here. So the first one, we talk in the application process, people are asked to like submit a form that has been signed off on for the leave, I'm assuming by a doctor or a nurse. And I'm wondering if you have worked with the health care community about this, see if they're comfortable with that, and what kind of liability will they be under if there's fraud in the system, and how do we keep them from being pressured by friends and people that they know to say, oh, come on, please just sign this for me, even when they know themselves they shouldn't be signing it.
Mr. Chair.
Chair Halverson.
2 points to reply. First of all, I tend to believe in the best of people, especially the best of people in Minnesota. And what we typically find when you look at research studies and people who have the ability to take leave from work, people tend to undertake it as opposed to overtake it. Just look at the amount of vacation time that gets laid on the table for Minnesota workers. So I would start with that premise there. However, we do have guardrails in the bill to make sure that people are using the benefit for the intended purposes. And the medical community is already very adept and experienced at providing verification as needed for other types of benefit programs, including unemployment insurance, but workers' compensation would be another example.
Thank you. Representative Eric.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Halverson. I'm going to probably follow up a little bit more on that with you outside of here as well. A couple of other things that I'm going to want to follow up with you as well. Like it was mentioned that the four states that have implemented this, you know, they already have the existing temporary disability insurance in place and they built off that system. And unfortunately right now, Minute has not picked a new commissioner yet, and not sure that they're ready to take on something like this. So hopefully we will maybe consider some other options like what we did with the licensing when we saw that they couldn't handle the bringing on the real ID. And so we sourced that out, and that would be an option if we think needs to be. Another question is, we have the opt-out ability, but will this program be viable if too many large companies opt out and we lose that big pool? And the last one, kind of dealing where Representative Vogel was going, being this is an insurance program, have we looked at a recent study to see what we think the take-up rate is going to be? Because I think the old one showed it at about 1.6%, but it just seems like the potential is there for it to be quite a bit larger than that. So things I would just like to be able to touch base with you further on.
Chair Halverson, any comments?
Just a comment that more brains, the better. I'm happy to work with anybody on this particular legislation, so look forward to talking more.
Okay. I don't see any other activity in the room. Would you like to follow up with any final comments on the bill?
I would, and I will be brief because I know we're at our time. I just want to thank you, first of all, for spending time on a cold day talking about this really important proposal. One of the things that has been running through my mind as I've been working on this bill and spending hours and hours and hours working on this bill and many more to go is that line from President Kennedy, we don't do this because it's easy, we do it because it's hard. We want the best for families in Minnesotans, and we spend a lot of time in this body talking about what can we do to do best by Minnesotans, best by our employers, best by the workers in our state, best by the families, best by our aging populations. And this is an attempt to do just that, to bring this Minnesota ingenuity to full force and make sure that we are creating a very healthy future for our families in Minnesota. We know because of Bureau of Labor Statistics that productivity in this state and in the country continues to grow at high rates, while we know wages tend to stay stagnant or even see dips throughout the year. When we look at the third quarter and fourth quarters of just the last year, we saw a dip in wages while productivity among workers was rising.
work is complicated. Getting this program passed is complicated, but lives are complicated as well. And I think that it's up to us as policymakers to recognize the ways that Minnesotans are trying to live their lives, go to work, and take care of their families, and to support them in doing so. We have far too many people relying on luck. For a lucky few, they have these kinds of benefits already. But luck doesn't take care of your baby. Luck doesn't hold your family members' hands when they're in hospice care. We need to support policies that are going to support healthy workers and healthy families. So I would appreciate your support on House File 5. Look forward to continuing to work on this bill.
Thank you, Chair Halverson. Thank you. Thank you. Representative Cagle?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to request a roll call.
Okay, roll call has been requested. We can do that. At this point, I'm going to renew my motion that House File 5 be re-referred to the Commerce Committee. All those in favor, excuse me, the roll call will be called by Andy Jurgensen. Chair votes aye.
Representative Cagle.
Aye.
Representative Rarick.
No.
Representative Brand.
Aye.
Representative Claflin. Representative Detmer.
No.
Representative Pagley.
Aye.
Representative Fabian.
No.
Representative Hornstein.
Aye.
Representative Lippert.
Aye.
Representative Meckland.
No.
Representative Nelson.
Aye.
Representative Purcell.
Aye.
Representative Vogel.
No.
Representative Jean.
Aye.
The ayes prevail 10-5. The motion is adopted, and we are adjourned.